Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is poet and songwriter and professor Jack Crocker, and we're talking about his second collection of poems, The Algorithm of I. Jack, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this collection.
Well, thanks. I'm happy to be here.
This is your second collection of poems?
Yes. My second official collection, my dissertation, I was allowed to do a creative dissertation at Texas Tech University, and it was a collection of poems as well.
So. Now, did you come to poetry later in your life, or have you always been writing poetry?
No, you know, it's one of those typical stories, Mark. I think when I was in the eighth or ninth grade, having to write, I went to a small country school and was interested in music first, songwriting, and then wrote some hymns. But I got into the whole idea of poetry. And like most of us, probably when I read the romantic poets, I
said, oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
This is who I want to be. But the typical story is that I had a fantastic English teacher who encouraged me, thought that I had some talent, and so early on I started. I was bitten by that infection of poetry.
It's fascinating to me because I talked to many artists through the decades, and oftentimes it's one teacher that
yeah.
sort of changed the course of your life.
It is. It is.
Now, you've taught, too.
Yeah. When the Yankees decided that I was not going to make it to the major leagues with them.
Okay. Now, we need to back up on that story, because I know. It's like, so you have a sports section of your life, too.
Yeah. I went to college on basketball scholarships and baseball as well.
What positions did you play?
I was a point guard in basketball and then a pitcher in baseball. And I turned to pitching because I had a good arm and I couldn't hit. So.
Wait, this is so wild when I think about this. So if they had shown interest in you, we probably wouldn't be talking today.
Probably not. I'm not sure how these things go. In fact, that's sort of what the algorithm of I is.
It's exactly what it is
about. You know, what happened to form us? how much is programmed, and how much is simply the randomness of where you were born and what happens to you?
You also had an early temptation to have a musical career.
Yeah, as I said, I started out, and I came up as right after. I was one of the lucky ones to experience, even though I'm old, to experience the beginning of rock and roll, essentially. So I got to experience, you know, the 50s and into the 60s with Elvis. And so I'm one of those who I can pick up things pretty easily, and so I started learning guitar and started singing and writing songs, and actually signed a recording contract with a small company in Memphis.
Freetone?
But soon, Freetone, yeah. But I soon decided, as a folk country music star, I was going to make a good English professor. So it turned.
Well, you know, this brings up an interesting thought to me. What if any is there a difference between songwriting and poetry writing?
Well, one of the main things with songwriting, it has to rhyme, and so much of poetry today is open forms, and much of mine is. But also, you have you have a chorus, a refrain that's there, and then it obviously has to have the music to go with it, But good poetry has all of those elements as well, you know, with the rhythm, the meter, and even the rhyme. But the songs are often, you know, much easier to be trite, to be cliched, And it's hard to get away from the theme of love and despair. And
the great themes of country, western, and rock and roll. Country,
that's right, yes.
Especially with your poetry, you are much more complex in your poetry than that. I mean, you're much more subtle, you're less didactic. You're more symbolic.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's part of the development, and that goes along with your influences. Who you read, and the idea that poetry is to and one of the things it's supposed to do is to make you experience, rather than saying I'm sad, I'll try to make you feel sad, or happy, or seeing beauty. It's a way that language tries to be rather than describe.
A lot of your poems are about self-examination, often affected by time and life's experiences. By getting a poem down, writing it, as opposed to having it just sit in your mind, is that part of the reflecting process of understanding yourself, getting it out there and getting it on a page and then reading it back?
Yes, I think so. A good friend of mine who's a prolific poet says he's not a writer, he's a rewriter. That's sometimes a poem comes, in fact, that the poem Offering in my book, it came almost total, and I didn't have to go back and make changes. The Algorithm of I, that poem, gosh, I spent so much time on it. And part of it was, there's a philosophical thread and theme running through that, and having to deal with how your mind is working. But yeah, usually it's a matter of, and sometimes, and I used to tell students, a poem can come from anywhere. You don't have to be drinking wine and feel lonely to write a poem. Like the mother of pies. Death is the mother of pies. Actually, it's a play off of Wallace Stevens' line in Sunday Morning, death is the mother of beauty. So the poem begins to form itself, and some of the poems turned into using rhyme, and one of the differences with rhyme, it's a closed form. So once you set a rhyme scheme, you're locked into finding
the word that will
work in that. And one of the positive things to that for me is that oftentimes having to find the rhyming word, you come up with words you would not normally have even thought of because of the search for rhyme. I did an interview once with a poet, Galway Connell, who's a major 20th century poet. He started out with rhyme, and then he switched to open forms. And in the interview, I asked him, I said, why did you switch from writing closed forms into open forms? And he said, well, I felt that I'd done all I wanted to do with closed forms, but then when I started with open forms, and I thought this was a great line, he said, I found out that with open forms, with free verse, every next line exists in infinity.
Whoa.
yeah, then it's open to anything. But in my practice, once I get a poem on a page, I keep fiddling with it. And sometimes,
I thought so.
Sometimes,
can you fiddle it to death? Is there a time when...
Yes, you can.
That's what I thought. Okay. It's like visual art. Visual arts are the same way. You can start noodling with it.
Yes. In fact, when I first started getting published, Miller Williams, who was editor of magazine New Orleans, had sent a poem, and he liked it and sent it back. He said, I like the poem, but won't you work on it some more and make some changes and send it back? And when I was all excited, and I said, Miller Williams likes my poem. So I immediately started working on it. I sent it back, and then he sent back, he said, you made it worse.
Whoa!
So, yeah, you can kill a poem by spending too much time with it.
Well, and I'm not a poet, so I want to emphasize that right there. And so I'm in awe of people who can write good poetry. It seems like it's a weird process just coming up with the poem to begin with, that when you're directed to make it better, all sorts of non-spontaneous things start coming into the play that just sort of gum up the feel of the poem.
Well, but it can be good spontaneity as well, because oftentimes you don't know where you're headed with a poem.
Yep.
And I've had occasions, in fact, there's a poem in this book where when I started it, the opening line was, these are the nails that hold our eels are the nails that hold us together. It was the opening line. And once I'd, well, you never complete a poem. You just have to let it go. But but ended up with that poem. That line became the last line in the poem. So, you know, part of the pleasure, I think, part of the pleasure of creativity is being open to let form and even content find its way into the poem. And I know that can sound, you know, like I'm talking about some sort of magical process, but I think it's the way the mind works. And one of the best ways to find poems, I found, is reading other poets. And it's not plagiarism. It's
right.
Just that something from one of their poems will trigger a memory or will trigger an image, then that turns into a poem for you. That's another avenue for writing. I think that, you know, when if you sit down and say, I'm going to write a poem about this experience or whatever, sometimes it doesn't work. For me, you have to let the kind of serendipity of the mind work.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you talked about a poem sometimes coming to you entire, that the whole you just wrote it down, while other times it's a process based on an inspiration.
Yeah, and or an image, and also, you know, you probably all writers will tell you should keep journals. You should, because some of your best lines come at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
And if you don't write it down, it's gone by the time you get up.
But have you ever found out that thing that you wrote down at 3 a.m. was just full of crap?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Oftentimes it is.
Because at 3 a.m. it can seem absolutely brilliant and God's gift to the
exactly.
muses, but then you wake up in the cold light of dawn and you look at it and go, are you crazy?
Well, that's Mark, that's a good expression too, because one of the things that often happens is once you quote finish a poem, it's like, oh God, that's the greatest poem ever written. You know, I actually did that. And then you go back 2 weeks later and read it and say, well, how did I do this crap?
That's really interesting, because visual artists will do the same thing. They will paint a painting, say, and they'll think it swings and it's really fine, and then put it away and then look back at it in a month or so and go, so that's not working at all.
Yeah, or paint over it.
Exactly.
as well, yeah. But, you know, I mentioned the journal. Sometimes, you know, you put down a thought or you put down an image, and maybe 5 years later, you're working on a poem and you're looking
right.
for something, and suddenly something that you had just noted 5 years ago is exactly what you were looking for a poem. So that's one of the good things, I think, about journaling.
But you're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is poet Jack Crocker, and we're talking about his second collection of poems, and it's really good, The Algorithm of I. Jack, I want to talk about that poem. That sort of, it's not the very first work in the book, but it leads off the whole collection. It's a big poem. That's why we're not having you read it. But it's a fascinating poem that in the end, there are all these things. It almost seems like an evolution of the self. You start with cell, and then there's a couplet after everything, primitive, homo sapien, and then all the different faces that you have in your life, and each one has a couplet underneath it. That's a fascinating series of imagery and ideas.
Well, thanks, and I'm glad that you noticed that, because it ended up being intentional. It started out being a way to deal with the idea that I've become fascinated with. I'm reading a lot of philosophy and theoretical physics is this whole idea of what is time, what is consciousness, which that we have no idea how consciousness came about or really what consciousness is except awareness. And so that the algorithm and I is the self. I think that whoever of our ancestors was first to say I in whatever language, because that was the moment, that was the expulsion from the garden, because I became aware of self. I'm not an animal. I'm not a tree, but I'm this separate consciousness that now I have to deal with. And so, became fascinated with the idea of how much of what we do is programmed, how much of the brain actually is an algorithm that's there when we were born. And it gets into the whole question now that's one of the popular topics with physicists and with philosophers is, do we have free will at all? If the universe is deterministic, already determined by natural law or whatever is out there, do we actually make decisions on our own? So that's one of the major questions in that poem, The Algorithm of I.
Well, it's interesting because in the prologue, one of the lines from that is, when my brain and I come to rest in frustration from chasing the secrets of itself. And that sort of sets up the whole book.
Yeah, it does, and the irony is the brain. It's my brain that's dealing with these ideas, as far as I can tell. I don't think there's anything else out there that's bringing me to these ideas. So the irony of the brain thinking about itself.
Weird. That's weird.
And what is it, when we say mind, so is mind different from the brain? So is it some outside electrical force, whether it's consciousness or not? But the thing that I end up with is, as I say, then the last trick to play is imagination. And to me, that's what, whatever that is, it's what artists do. It's how we can imagine things. We can imagine a future. But the couplets that you mentioned, I think they're 43 or more.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw those as a kind of algorithm. So these are like ones and O's.
Fascinating.
Set up to represent the algorithm of finally who I am or who I think I am with that. So
I want to get you to read a poem before we run out of time, because I have a feeling in our conversation already. We could be talking for hours and get lost, and we're going to run out of time. Can I ask you to read a poem?
Sure.
What one would you like to read?
Do you want one that's, you'd mentioned death is the mother of pies, but also...
Elvis is good if you want to read Elvis.
Elvis? Okay. Let me find that one.
Page 29.
Okay. Yeah, as I mentioned, I grew up at the time. My first rock concert was actually to see Elvis. In a civic auditorium in Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Before, just as he was getting started.
Did he have all the moves? Did he have all the moves?
Oh, yeah. He came out in a flaming red suit. And remember, there were only three people on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Scotty Moore on guitar and Bill Black on bass. And how revolutionary and how threatening they were to Western civilization.
Only show him above the waist when he was on Ed Sullivan.
On Ed Sullivan with it. I'll explain a reference here in the poem. Dewey Phillips was a DJ in Memphis at WHPQ, and he was no relation to Sam Phillips, who started Sun Records, you know, who really started rock and roll with Elvis and that whole group. Dewey Phillips was one of the first white DJs to start playing blues and soul, and so he was the one that, as teenagers, we listened to into the night. And he, for example, when Elvis's first record came out, Hound Dog, Elvis took it to him at the radio station. He played his whole show, which was like 2 hours, he only played Hound Dog. So that was a pretty good introduction.
Excellent.
to Elvis. He also he had these just nonsensical statements, but one of his leading things was, anybody want to buy a duck? He'd break into the song and say, anybody want to buy a duck? So that was kind of a catchphrase that, as teenagers, we would go around saying, anybody want to buy a duck?
So, I remember that. Okay, we better read the poem because we're literally running out of time.
Okay, this is Elvis. It's midnight in a 58 Ford, and I'm doing Maybelline's 104, my souped-up heart racing to red, hot, and blue, blood tuned to the DNA of WHBQ, and Dewey, anybody want to buy a duck? Phillips, the only white man spinning the soul of blues, born in the gospel womb of Delta Dirt and the juke joints of Saturday Night Sin. Hormones harmonizing in the key of E, 12 bars of puberty, rocking in on the midnight special and thrust of Elvis hips, learning fast, a stellar guitar, gut bucket growl, and snarling lip would get me the long, tall Sally beat of backseat thrills.
Wow! You know, hearing you recite that, that needs to be, like, you need to be on a stage with a guitar. That's a song. That is a freaking, yeah, an electric guitar too, not an acoustic.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You can't do it with acoustic.
No.
You have to have the speakers going.
Wow. And that you grew up, as you mentioned, in the Mississippi Delta area. So a lot of your poems, not a lot, but a number of them, are about the changing South. There's a whole conversation with a Confederate statue, and then upon the removal of a Confederate statue, but also about the spirit and the feeling of what it was like to grow up at that time.
And that whole first section called Expatriate is really about, you know, dealing with the culture that you're given and how you change in values and beliefs, but yet the memories that are there, you know, like Delta Nights, the poem. It goes back to influence from the saying in Robert Frost's poem, Mending Wall. It's the difficulty of going behind your father's sayings. And so that's part of what the whole first section is about.
Do you like to read your poetry to an audience, or do you want them to just read it in a book and have it in their own head?
No, I enjoy...
Because that was a performance you just did.
Yeah, and I enjoy... I was an entertainer. I at one point was traveling around doing... I never had a band, but I would do and do songs and poetry and talk about writing at colleges. So there is an entertainment dimension to it. And I think, poetry is intended to be read aloud. And even if you're looking at this book, rather than reading it in your mind, oftentimes there is more to the meaning to read it aloud, and you get the rhythm,
yeah.
and you get part of that as well. Yeah.
Do you also get the feedback from the audience, like the feedback?
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed reading it. In fact, one of the highlights is when we had the opening for the book here at the university. I had a really sizable audience who came out, and we were introducing the members' press as well. So I had fun reading the poems, and I also brought my guitar and did some songs that I did as well.
Okay, that settles it. We're going to have you back to talk more about this book. Because we're completely out of time, and I have so many stuff I want to talk to you about more. My guest tonight is poet, songwriter, and Jack Crocker. And we've been talking about his second collection of poems. It swings. The Algorithm of I. Jack, it's been a real pleasure.
Well, thanks, Mark, so much for having me on.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.